Now, from the left coast to the D.C. Beltway, covering the topics you love to hate and hate to miss, it's the Silk or Joe Show.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome to the Silk or Joe Show. Co-host Joe with you here this weekend. Happy to be here with you all. So, contrary to what I might have said on the Alan Nathan Show when I guest hosted earlier this week, I guess this means I have not been arrested, at least as of yet. We'll see how this show plays out. Anyway, the Silk or Joe Show is brought to you by the Main Street Radio Network, so we want to thank the Main Street Radio Network for this, because sometimes they disagree with the content we have on the program. Certainly, some of their clients have disagreed with content over the years, and yet they keep us afloat anyway, so we appreciate that. We also want to thank the Salem Radio Network for distributing this show. Silk or Joe Show can be found at MainStreetRadioNetwork.com. You can also find the Alan Nathan Show up on there, as well as on AlanNathan.com and on Twitter at Alan Nathan. But you can find the Silk or Joe Show on social media, on Facebook under Main Street Radio Network, on Getter, GETTR.com at Silk or Joe Show, and on Wimkin, WIMKIN, under Main Street Radio Network. All right, I don't have any guests weighing in the wing for this segment. We're due to have some later in the show, but we'll see how that plays out. If they don't show up, I can't do anything about that, such is the case sometimes when you might hear me going on and on for a little while, and you think, gee whiz, normally he has half the show with guests. What happened? Well, somebody didn't show. That's probably what happened. Pretty much all except for one time, actually. That was the case. So, earlier this week, when I guest hosted for Alan, I had a topic that I never actually fully explored. The basic premise of the question was, why is it that we are now just learning that Jack Smith plans to have some more indictments against Trump? What is it that he's trying to divert attention from? And I never actually got around to answering that, because I always talked about the indictments, and then I followed it by talking about how the GOP isn't going to bother fighting back against the indictments because they have no strength in them and no strength of character. They just have strength of donations coming from you, and that's really all they care about. So I didn't actually get to this part, but there's two headlines here that this might have been related to. The announcement, for example, could have been to coincide with what Breitbart's reporting here in this headline: White House denies Vice President Joe Biden's office colluded with family business despite emails. So, you know, the fact that it came public like that and was asked of the White House, and they had that issue of formal denial like that, you know, that might be reason enough to issue this announcement that Trump is going to be indicted again later this month. But coincidental with that timing, and I think we can actually pinpoint when these indictments will be issued, because there's a court filing saying David Weiss, special counsel appointed by Merrick Garland to investigate Hunter Biden, intends to indict Hunter before the end of this month. Now, that could be when that indictment comes out, we're going to see in more indictments of Trump, these very ones that Jack Smith is talking about, which center on Donald Trump asking to look at voting machines and see if the voting machines had been altered in some way, shape, or form, tampered with, sabotaged, whatever, which apparently is illegal now to make sure the equipment worked properly. So I guess watch out, all you technicians out there who are working on the voting machines. Jack Smith might be coming for you, unless you're one of the ones rigging them, in which case, never mind. So the question is now about David Weiss and his intentions, because, you know, he's been little iffy here. He's been on the teams that have been in favor of Hunter Biden. He's kind of been on that general side of the aisle, so we're not sure where he's going to land. And if Merrick Garland appointed him to be a special counsel, most likely it is to cover up something. So if there is a case here that comes out with an indictment, I mean, he said he intended to file an indictment by the end of September. If that's the case, it's going to be for something minor, or it's going to be something that's going to blow over real easily, or it's just going to be another opportunity to get a very good plea deal with immunity and all that. Who knows, though? There's an outside chance that it might lead to Joe Biden being indicted and railroaded out of office, and some more popular Democrat replacing him, because, you know, people probably believed that the election, 81 million voted for Joe Biden, despite him not drawing a crowd bigger than, you know, more people than I could count on both hands. But at this point, it's not entirely certain that they're going to believe that, Joe Biden won the election by a landslide, so they might need some new blood in there in order to make a believable narrative for when they rig the election in 2024. So we'll see how this plays out. Don't know enough at this point to speculate further than that, but that is the general meat of what I was failing to get at when I was building the Feast for Your Ears down the Alan Nathan Show earlier this week. Now then, there are some other headlines to get into from this past week as well. One of them is actually pretty amusing. New York City Mayor Eric Adams, he said, quote, this issue of the migrant crisis, quote, this issue will destroy New York City, unquote. Now, the Democrats are the ones who said New York City was a sanctuary city. And look at all the money that New York City makes. It's supposed to be one of the biggest, richest, wealthiest cities on the world, right? And, you know, liberals like to tout how big the economy of New York City is when they try to compare how great liberal destinations are to conservative ones. Yet, New York City has only had a relative handful of migrants compared to cities like El Paso, for example, which aren't even anywhere close in size to New York City. It's no contest. Yet, some border towns like El Paso have to handle huge influxes of illegal immigrants, thousands of them. And they just do it. But New York City doesn't. Wonder why. New York City said it was a sanctuary city. Surely they could have been able to put their money where their mouth is, right? Or did they just not expect to have their bluff called? Maybe that is that what this is? Okay, yes, that is exactly what this is. I cannot drag that out much longer. That is precisely what it is. They just virtue signaled by saying they were a sanctuary city. They expected maybe one or two people to make their way all the way up there. And then suddenly when they get busloads of them coming in, they realize, okay, we weren't expecting this. We weren't expecting Republican governors to grow a pair and do this sort of thing. We thought this would just be a strictly border town issue, something we'd never have to deal with. And now they're paying for it. Paying for their sanctimony, and, you know, I'm enjoying it. New York City is a crap hole anyway, so whatever. Maybe it'll actually be discouraging these illegal immigrants if they learn that they're going to be in New York City. They're going to be like, well, maybe I'm not going to go into America now because I'm going to be sent there, and that's not really a good town for anyone. All right. Another headline, too, to get into. Actually, it's related to the Trump indictments. I just probably should have had this up near the correction so there would be a more smooth segue. But the former head of the Proud Boys, Enrique Tarrio, when he was sentenced to 22 years in prison, he said outright that the government told him to lie about Trump in order to get an indictment against him. I guess to lie that Trump was planning an insurrection on January 6th and wanted the riots and all that sort of thing. So the fact that he refused is why he's facing 22 years in prison, and that's a clear message to the rest of us. I've been saying all along, this is what the government is going to do to you. If you don't turn on your candidate, if you don't turn on your allies, if you don't turn on your family, they're going to do stuff like this to you. Lock you up for 22 years because for something you weren't even involved with. Because, you know, Enrique Tarrio, he wasn't at the Capitol on January 6th, yet he's facing 22 years in prison, more than anyone else for it. And meanwhile, we're seeing rapists get away with 180 days in prison. That was a recent headline right there. So that really shows what Democrats prioritize. If you were even at all involved in January 6th, 22 years in prison if you don't turn on Trump. But if you rape somebody, 180 days and then probation, you're fine, whatever. I guess we should have seen that coming when they put Ketanji Brown Jackson on the Supreme Court. She's notoriously into giving light sentences like that. It's rather disgusting, though, the priorities Democrats have. This is why we call it Trump derangement syndrome. These people actually seem to believe that rape and the case of District Attorney Alvin Bragg, armed robbery, are much less serious crimes than being Donald Trump or being an ally of his. So they're willing to just throw all these other things aside and go right for the ridiculous sentences just for expressing First Amendment rights, challenging elections, something Democrats do all the time. Democrat attorney Mark Elias makes his career doing this sort of thing. He's very well known and popular for overturning elections in favor of Democrats. Yet that's not considered overthrowing democracy. He's never been charged for it. But suddenly a Republican does it, like Trump? Oh boy, nope, that's, we're going to make it illegal for Republicans to do this kind of thing. And here's how they're going to do it, too. It's called selective prosecution. They're going to just invent laws, legislate from the bench like they're doing right now, and they're only going to prosecute Republicans. So Democrats will challenge any elections they lose. They might win the challenges. They will never face any legal problems for it. It's only the Republicans who will be facing legal challenges. And this is why I say that Republicans really need to engage in the same kind of lawfare that Democrats are engaging in. Because all these indictments Trump is facing in the districts that he's going to be tried in, at least until the appeals start, he's going to get convictions against him. So there's going to be a window where Republican attorneys general, Republican district attorneys, they can really go in after Democrats, but they're not, because that's not what they do. You don't pay them and your donor money and all that stuff to go in office to do anything. They certainly aren't going to do. If you do, if you think they're actually going to do something and you donate to them, you're a fool. That's all I can say. You are totally ignoring their record of not doing jack, at least the majority of them. I mean, I doubt that that's going to change anytime soon. More Silker Joe Show after this break.
Recent news reports are raising the alarm about illegal, disposable vapes in kid-enticing flavors that are pouring in from China. Here's Fentanyl Fathers co-founder Greg Swan.
I lost my firstborn son, Drew, to an overdose, a tragedy no parent should experience. The FDA has started taking action against illegal, disposable vapes that could contain deadly fentanyl. Now, they need to get every one of these out of our communities.
Sponsored by Fentanyl Fathers.
Come get back to school ready with me and the brands I've partnered with. ThredUp is a one-stop shop where you can clean out your closet and buy affordable, sustainable secondhand clothing. Go to ThredUp.com/cleanout, order their signature polka dot bag or print a shipping label, and send ThredUp your gently worn items. They'll do all the work to resell your items. Target has all the national brands that you are looking for, and with deals starting at just $1, Target has all the back-to-school and back-to-college essentials you'll need. From T-Mobile, pick up a free 5G smartphone like the exclusive Rebel 6 Pro 5G or the award-winning Sync Up Kids Watch for free. Fairlife ultra-filtered milk is a great-tasting source of nutrition for families like mine. With 50% more protein and 50% less sugar than regular milk, Fairlife's 14-ounce bottles offer great-tasting, nutrition-rich products made to enjoy on the go. For more information on these brands, visit their websites.
Sponsored by Office Depot Office Max. It's back to school season, and teachers, parents, and students from kindergarten to college can find everything they need to succeed at Office Depot Office Max. With savings up to 60% on the company's best-selling school supplies through September 16th. And must-haves like Crayola products, spiral notebooks, composition books, and glue starting at just 50 cents, Office Depot Office Max is ready to kick the new school year into gear. Shoppers can get even more discounts and earn rewards towards future purchases with a free Office Depot Office Max Rewards membership. Need your school supplies fast? Customers can take advantage of the company's free 20-minute in-store pickup or opt for same-day delivery for qualifying orders. Office Depot and Office Max stores are supporting hundreds of Title I public schools across the country with an in-store donation program. Make a donation at checkout to help a local school in your community get new supplies to create a more productive learning environment. Visit officedepot.com/backtoschool.
Moms know it's the little things that matter most. A kiss for skinned knees, a hug for hurt feelings, and the small acts that keep families healthy. Many moms before me have seen serious diseases claim the health and lives of their families. Mine was affected by polio. Today, vaccinations for polio and many other diseases can help protect adults and children, generation after generation, mom after mom. Learn more about how to help keep your family healthy at vaccines.com.
Adopt US Kids presents multiple choice parenting.
Your daughter just had her first breakup. Do you A, put yourself in her shoes?
How could he do this to you? And for Sheila, she has split ends.
B, console her.
Oh, sweetie, this is going to happen a lot. 4, maybe 5 more times before you get married.
C, take charge.
Got to get this all straightened out. Give a little talking to man, mano a mano. Hey, Steve, it's now a good time? No? Okay, no problem. Bye.
Or D, help her find a new boyfriend.
I know a great place to meet boys. The internet. Nice, single boys. Never mind. How about some ice cream?
As a parent, there are no perfect answers. But you don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same.
For more information on how you can adopt, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUS Kids, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Silk or Joe Show, everybody. So I was, toward the end of the last segment, I mentioned the head of the Proud Boys being finally convicted, 22 years in prison for being the wrong rioter, and we now have our guest, so I'm just going to complete this thought, that Denver, they have just, while we're talking about people on January 6th going to prison, not having trials or anything like that, Denver just paid $5 million to BLM protesters, you know, people who were torching buildings and stuff, for daring to arrest them for torching buildings and stuff. So that's a little wrap-up on the unequal justice. But now we are joined by Adam Gouillet. He is president of Accuracy in Media, and we have a back-to-school topic. So, Adam, thank you for being on the show today. How are you?
Hey, I'm great. Thank you so much for having me. The torching reminds me, by the way, in the summer of 2020, a group of about a dozen celebrities took to Twitter and bragged about paying the bail money for those violent rioters, donating like six-figure gifts. These were celebrities like Steve Carell and Seth Rogen. After our activists sent tens of thousands of emails and made hundreds of phone calls to their managers, agents, and publicists, they never tweeted about that again.
Well, congratulations on that work. Kamala Harris was involved in that as well. Maybe not that particular organization that you were had access to like that, where you had those donors, but she had a similar organization that she was funding that was bailing out people, and I think actually one of the people that was bailed out by that organization was an actual rapist.
Truly horrible. Our message at the time was, if you celebrities want to donate money to people in need, donate to minority-owned business owners whose businesses were burnt to a crisp. Donate to the victims, not the criminals. It was outrageous.
Right, well, you had a virtue signal somewhere. You might as well virtue signal with the people who might turn on your neighborhood eventually. So it could have been like a sort of protection racket that they were hoping to pay into.
Yeah, very good point. But yeah, to your point about the back-to-school content, what we've discovered in our investigation into public education throughout the country, and we've been in over 250 school districts across the country with hidden cameras, primarily targeting red states in red areas, and we find again and again that administrators brag about lying to parents, deceiving parents, breaking laws in order to push radical principles associated with critical race theory. And one of the most popular tactics they use is a classroom news service called Newzella.
So what is this Newzella? I mean, is it just critical race theory with a different name and that's it?
Sort of. So Newzella is basically a service that partners with all these different news outlets and curates their articles for children. So in and of itself, it's innocuous, it's unthreatening. They might take an article from the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal and, you know, dumb down the language and verbiage a little bit for a seventh grader. Also being used, Newzella is a director of the 1619 budget. They partnered with the Poverty Law Center. They partner with Marxist historian Howard Zinn. And if you live in a state where it's illegal to teach your child about the 1619 Project and that America was founded to preserve slavery, as they lyingly claim, if you're in a state where your administrators and your teachers can't use that, what these teachers do is they take the Newzella version of the 1619 Project and they assign that as reading material instead. Because if your kid comes with a project that says 1619 Project on it, or Southern Poverty Law Center, you'd be up in arms. But they might send home basically that same content, except it says Newzella on the masthead, and you're none the wiser. It's outrageous.
Yeah, and this is going on right under people's noses, as you emphasized. Red states, red districts, yet the teachers there are just so radicalized that they're doing this sort of thing anyway, bypassing laws. And it's not the only area that they're trying to break the laws either in. For example, if the state has a law that about trans kids or whatever, you know, teachers, one of the teachers unions actually sent out in Colorado a letter saying shred any records you have that you were making about whether or not the kids were trans and do it all on paper so that you can burn them before a federal request can come in for information. And then you have several school districts in the state of Virginia just outright saying we're going to not go by the state mandated curriculum, you know, totally illegal, but we're just going to refuse to cooperate anyway. So really, where's the, I guess they just think they can get away with it because there's no accountability except for the occasional angry parent showing up at a school board meeting.
Well, and that's just the thing. I think many parents view their school district the way we view our congressman. As a whole, Congress is incredibly unpopular. It's got like a 30% approval rating on a good day. But 95, 98% of congressmen get reelected because everyone wants to assume that theirs is the good one. Same thing with public education. We all agree it's a mess, but everybody wants to believe that their child's school district, they would never do anything like that. I met with the administrator. I met with the principal. I met with the teacher. They seem like nice people. Well, I got news for you. I met with those exact same people, but my team did it with hidden cameras, and they bragged to me about how they lied to you. And they don't do it because they're evil people. They do it because they are so convinced that it's in the best interest of these students to lie and see parents in order to push rules associated with critical race theory into the minds of children, so convinced that it's in the interest of those children. But we would, of course, say, parents should be determining what's in the best interest of the child, not these government bureaucrat educators.
Yeah, and you got to wonder too, you know, with the 1619 project having been roundly debunked and whatever the current iteration is being way different than the original version because they had to issue corrections for being so historically inaccurate, these teachers still wholeheartedly believe in it. It's almost like a cult mentality that they have about it, and they just want to induct new members, indoctrinate new members. And I think the last thing anyone wants is a teacher who is more dedicated to their faith, whether that's a religion or the religion of the 1619 project, than to fact.
Yeah, that's a great comparison, because I think it really is like a religion to these administrators. They think they're doing God's work if they believed in God, except, of course, their God is government, and your child is the bad byproduct of it with the radical ideas they want to push into their head. And you brought up, you know, the trans issue and some of the LGBTQ stuff. I was in a district in Dayton, Ohio, which is an Air Force town, a conservative town in a pretty conservative state. And in that district, an administrator told me about how they allow trans boys to use the girls' locker room. And I just joked that if I was 12 or 13 years old, I bet me or one of my dumb friends would have claimed that we identify as a girl just to go in the girls' locker room. And he said without missing a beat, oh, I have no doubt that that happens. Well, that's a major problem. That's a major problem. And things like that are happening in districts around the country, only the parents don't know about it because the administrators are literally trained in practicing on how to lie and how to deceive to these parents. The only solution is school choice. These bans on, you know, whatever trans rules you want, and these bans on critical race theory teachings, they merely provide a false sense of security. Winning school board fights is nice, but when you've met with hundreds of administrators who brag about ignoring state law, you think they care who the school board is? The only solution is to get your kid the heck out of traditional government schools.
At this point, I'm forced to agree with you on that because they just found all these ways, all these back doors, and you can't be with the child the entire time they're in the classroom unless you're homeschooling them, and that's the only way to be safe these days, and the teachers and their unions have made sure of that.
Yeah, that's right. These administrators, you know, when we expose them on hidden camera, a number of them have gotten fired, which is fine. Bad people should get fired. People doing bad things should have repercussions for their actions. But they're just going to be replaced by somebody who does the exact same thing, only is smart enough to keep their mouth shut. The only solution is to pass universal school choice like they've done in Ohio in the wake of our investigation there, like they've done in Arizona, Iowa, where the money follows the child. As Corey DeAngelis always brilliantly puts it, we should be funding
students.
We'll
have to leave that. Unfortunately, we're out of time for the segment, but I don't go ahead. Appreciate you being on the show.
We encourage men to take care of their largest organ, their skin. Plaque psoriasis is a common skin disease that may appear as raised and scaling red plaques anywhere on the body, like the knees and elbows, and even private and sensitive areas like the groin, genitals, between the buttocks, and armpits. Symptoms can include pain, cracking skin, and itching. While it occurs equally among men and women, several studies have shown that men tend to have more severe plaque psoriasis. Chad Cragen was diagnosed nearly 20 years ago with plaque psoriasis, affecting multiple areas of his body, including his elbows, knees, and between his buttocks. Chad is sharing his story to encourage other men to talk to their healthcare provider about their symptoms and learn about a steroid-free treatment option that may be able to help.
When I was first diagnosed, I walked out of my dermatologist's office with 5 different tubes and bottles of topical medicine to use on different parts of my body. Managing so many treatments, all with different instructions for different body parts, made my treatment routine confusing and time-consuming. Recently, I started using a steroid-free cream, Zoryve, Reflumilast cream, that has simplified the management of my psoriasis, as I can use it anywhere on my body. I apply it once daily for my flare-ups, and it's really helped manage my symptoms by clearing my skin and reduce my pain and itch too. I also like the cream because it's not greasy or messy. It spreads easily, and I just need to apply a small amount to the area of my body where there are plaques. I think a lot of men with plaque psoriasis, especially if they have it in more private areas, may not bring it up with their healthcare provider. I encourage them to go talk to their provider and learn about the latest treatment options. And don't be afraid to have your healthcare provider examine your full body, because psoriasis may look and feel different depending on location. With the appropriate treatment regimen, things can change.
Zoryve is a prescription medicine used on the skin, topical, including in areas with skin folds to treat plaque psoriasis in people 12 years of age and older. It is not known if Zoryve is safe and effective in children under 12 years of age. Before taking Zoryve, tell your healthcare provider if you have liver problems and about the medicines you take. Do not use Zoryve in or on your eyes, mouth, or vagina. Tell your healthcare provider if you are pregnant, breastfeeding, or plan to be. It is not known if Zoryve will harm your unborn baby. The most common side effects of Zoryve are diarrhea, headache, trouble sleeping, nausea, application site pain, upper respiratory tract infections, and urinary tract infections. These are not all of the possible side effects of Zoryve. Talk to your healthcare provider to find out if Zoryve is right for you. For more information about plaque psoriasis and Zoryve, a steroid-free topical that works across affected body areas, talk to your healthcare provider or visit www.zoryve.com. That's Zoryve.com. Sponsored by Arcutis Biotherapeutics.
What is dedication?
I am the father of a 9-year-old little girl and a 6-year-old little boy. And I find fatherhood both relentlessly challenging and relentlessly rewarding. My daughter is biological and my son is adopted. I love them both so much. From the morning when you wake up to putting them to bed at night, and every moment in between, it really is so special, and boy, is it exhausting. One thing that I fear about being a parent is the future for my children. I think a parent's job is to protect our children, but also prepare them for the world so they become good, kind human beings. But I'm also hopeful that the future holds a more inclusive and compassionate world for them.
That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
I was in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean when it happened. There was a sudden jolt and our submarine crashed on the seafloor. We were in total darkness.
That's Dr. Dejana Figueroa, a marine biologist and STEM teacher, talking about a deep sea dive she'll never forget.
It's funny. When I was a kid, I was afraid of the ocean. And there I was, 2 miles below the surface. But as a scientist, you prepare for that. Using our training and a little creativity, we fixed the sub and finished our experiments. The dive was just too important. Every dive gives us glimpses at things few people ever get to see. Glowing creatures, fiery undersea volcanoes. When we got back to the surface, I kissed the ground and called my mom, of course. But you know what? I wouldn't trade that dive for anything.
Dr. Figueroa uses her passion for STEM to discover new things and make the world a better place. She can STEM, so can you. Check out She Can STEM for more stories and inspiration. A message from the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Silk Road Joe Show, everybody. So we're getting towards the fall and winter. COVID season, it's here. Although it never really left us. But there's 2 new variants that they're talking about now. And then, of course, Dr. Jill Biden, she has been diagnosed with COVID, allegedly. We don't really know if it's... Because she's the one who said... Well, not the one. She's one of the ones who said that if you get vaccinated, you're not going to get COVID. So here she is with her second case of COVID after getting the vaccine, and she's been boosted as well, as many times as has been, we are told, is necessary so far. She's gotten every booster, and here she is with COVID nonetheless. And now Joe Biden is masking as well. And while all that's going on, we actually have several school districts now starting to mask up. Public elementary school district in a wealthy D.C. suburb are now having third graders wear masks again. That's just the latest one. Yet, you know, despite all this, there's something out there called the Cochrane Study. Now, what this is, if you listened to the Alan Nathan Show when I wasn't hosting, you would have heard Alan describing this study. It's like a study of all mask studies, basically. They looked at all the mask studies out there, all the data out there, and their determination was there's no evidence supporting that masking actually works. But there's plenty of evidence showing why it's a bad idea. High carbon monoxide, I'm looking right at the word, dioxide. High carbon dioxide concentrations that hurt a child's growth, for example. So I guess they just want kids to be dumb by asphyxiating them. And all the masking and lockdowns that put our kids on average way behind where they're supposed to be as far as education goes. Yet Democrats favor the developmentally disabled, I guess. The less intelligent you are, the less you question their orders of the day. Followers don't need to think. And they want you to be one of their followers. They want your kids to be their followers. And so we're now seeing another resurgence of COVID, and this sort of thing makes election fraud pretty darn easy. You have now a strong excuse for universal mail-in balloting if everyone's stuck at home because of the pandemic. And it's also an excuse for no one to look at the voting records, an excuse for just sending ballots out all willy-nilly to every address out there. And that is how you do fraud, because some of those addresses are entirely fictitious. A lot of them are entirely fictitious. And so someone in the Democrat machine, they just take the ballots for themselves, write in the Democrat candidate, put an X or something, because they don't bother with signature verification. We learned that with the Arizona midterm election. And there you go. You've now got to vote for a Democrat. Don't even need to do the hammer scorecard, all that sort of stuff that General McInerney brings up, because you have a strong operation enough already. You know, register, do a voting drive, you register a bunch of homeless people to the same building, have all the ballots delivered to that building. No one questions it. No one is looking at the addresses and going, hey, that's an empty lot, or hey, that's an office building, or hey, that's a church. Nobody actually has that as a residential address. That's impossible. That's not even zoned for a residential address. No one's looking at the voter rolls. In fact, if you try to, Democrats say you're racist, you want to lynch people or something, if you want to clean up the voter rolls, remove all the dead people, remove all the people who move. By the way, that's another thing. Your address doesn't, your voter registration data does not automatically change when you move, so, or when you die. It's eventually it'll change after you die, maybe, if they bother cleaning up the voter rolls, but normally it doesn't happen. And so there's plenty of dead people on the voter rolls. Plenty of people who have since moved, left the district, and now many states, including Virginia, offer this eternal absentee voting, where you sign up and you say, hey, for every election in the future, send me an absentee ballot. And they will. They will send an absentee ballot for every future election to the address you give them. And after that, boy, how easy it is to fraud. You know, like I said, all you have to do is grab a bunch of homeless people off the street, send, put them back out on the street, and then boom, all their ballots are coming to your Democrat committee headquarters for until eternally, I guess, because no one cleans the voter rolls. So you now permanently have a couple hundred ballots coming to that district, and you're just going to write in Democrat on them, because these homeless folks, they're not going to vote. They don't care. Not many of them are democratically inclined. They have more important things to worry about. They're pretty easy to take advantage of in this manner. In fact, Democrats consistently take advantage of them in this manner. And there's not going to be, when you do this eternal absentee ballot system, there's no checks on it. No one checks to see, are you still alive? Are you still at this address? That doesn't happen. I guess they assume that the check is when you return the ballot or not. But then no one's checking anyway, so it doesn't matter. As I said, they think checking voter registrations are racist. So eternal pandemics keeping us, giving us this universal mail-in voting, it's pretty easy to fraud. after that. In fact, wouldn't be surprised if you never got a ballot. No matter how many times you wrote in, you never get one because someone else gets it already. And with no in-person voting, oh well, you're at the whims of the government as to if you even get a ballot. And then there's also if your ballot is even going to be counted. You know, pretty easy to see that it's counted if you shove it into the machine. At least you hope it is. That's where the stuff the General McInerney talks about comes in. A lot of these voting machines are open to the internet, so anyone, say, at Obama's house or whatever with a laptop can reach out and decide, hey, you didn't actually vote for Donald Trump, you voted for Joe Biden, then boom, your vote's gone. But it's still a little bit more a tangible thing than just sending a mail-in ballot. And on top of that, if you do send in a mail-in ballot, well, all someone has to do is check to see how you voted and then burn it, toss it in the garbage, whatever. You never know what happens to it. You can't even confirm that it even got there. Yet they have plausible deniability. I guess that's the big difference. If you shove your ballot into the machine, you see it register, you've seen that it went in. What happens after that, you can't do anything about. Whereas if you mail the ballot, you have no idea if it actually got there or not. And, well, unless you pay for an extra service to track the letter to make sure it gets there. So, it's happened to me in the 2018 midterms, in fact, where I put in a ballot plenty of time, and I was told later on, oh, we didn't receive your ballot in time for the election. No, you definitely did, because I've sent it weeks in advance. But that's what happens. They just decide, oh, we don't like the way you voted, so we're just not going to bother counting the ballot. And again, you have no way of verifying whether or not it actually got there on time, unless you pay for one of these extra services. So pandemics are very helpful to achieving this sort of universal mail-in voting, where it makes it even easier. You don't have to do any of these electronic shenanigans. You can just tell people, oh yeah, lost in the mail, or didn't arrive in time, or whatever. And then you can also say that ballots that arrived weeks after the election actually arrived the day of. You just hadn't gotten around to counting them yet. Makes fraud very easy. It's a lot less believable on election night unless you just happen to have tubs full of ballots like they did in Fulton County, Georgia, where we saw on video they just whipped them out from under tables after all the people who were supposed to make sure elections were fair were escorted out of the building. You know, suddenly the workers whip out all these boxes full of ballots from under the table and start scanning them. So unless you're ready with something like that, then it's like a little less believable that you're still scanning ballots weeks after the fact until you finally get the right number for the Democrat to win. So what with mail-in ballots? No, it actually is very believable that it takes forever to count them because, you know, the post office, it's so slow, and you don't know how many votes they're counting or how many people are there to count them. It's a lot more plausible deniability, as I said, about that situation. But I've digressed from the incoming pandemic a little bit. That's the motivation for it. What sort of shenanigans can we expect? Oh yeah, Los Angeles County, they might bring back mask mandates just right now due to an uptick in COVID cases. So you also have, this was a very interesting thing. There's a baby that got one of the COVID vaccines, because why not? And their brown eyes turned to bright blue after they were given it. And then you have Megyn Kelly. She came out and said she developed an autoimmune disease after getting the vaccine. Again, that's another side effect that you get plenty of times from it. So, of course, there's, if you look at Gateway Pundit, you'll see it more clearly. All these people dropping dead all the time. We're told that that's normal now. Tell me, has it ever been normal for people to just randomly drop dead, largely athletes? I don't think so. Not that I recall. And I used to pay a lot more attention to sports, mind you, than I do right now. Yet I've noticed that a lot more athletes are dropping dead than ever before. But we're supposed to think that that's either because of COVID or because of it's just something that we never noticed before. Both, we've been told both things by scientists and doctors. That I guess we're supposed to simultaneously believe that A, this is something that's always happened, and B, this is only the result of COVID and nothing, getting COVID and nothing else, and that we should have our vaccines to make sure that we don't drop dead. And speaking of the vaccines, you know, another interest, if you're thinking, oh no, this can't be that sinister, they wouldn't lie about this sort of thing. Remember during the pandemic when the vaccines came out, and nurses and doctors were refusing to take it, they were fired, even though you could still transmit COVID if you had the vaccine. they were still fired anyway, called a health risk or whatever, and people were denied surgeries as well if they weren't vaccinated. But then at the same, that became a self-fulfilling prophecy because they kept saying COVID's going to overwhelm our emergency rooms and stuff. But that only happened because they fired all the doctors and nurses. And then, so they created the tragedy of overflowing hospitals by firing qualified people. And then they exploited it to try and scare you into the vaccine. These people are nuts. They are psychopaths. Don't believe a word they say. More Silk Dish after this break.
Rockstar Energy is jumpstarting the summer you want with the energy you need, giving away $50,000 to fuel your Memorial Day weekend. Millions of Americans are eager to kick off the holiday weekend with a travel getaway. In fact, experts predict 82% of summer travel will be by car. And with high gas prices, 89% will be looking for travel rewards, which is why Rockstar Energy wants to help you save at the pump and stay energized to get to your next destination. Here's how it works. Throughout Memorial Day weekend, the first 1,000 people to stop by any gas station, buy three Rockstar Energy products, and fuel up on gas or electric charge will get up to $50 cash back. Text ENERGY to 81234 to find out more. The rewards don't stop there. All summer long, you can earn up to $5 cash back when you buy two Rockstar Energy products and fill up at any gas station. To find out more, text ROCKSTAR to 81234. Let Rockstar fuel your drive this summer. I'm Kendra Wright.
In 2021, New York Times bestselling author Victoria Aveyard introduced Realmbreaker, the first book in an epic fantasy adventure series. Realmbreaker and its highly anticipated sequel, Bladebreaker, both debuted at number one on the New York Times bestsellers list. Now, readers can enjoy Bladebreaker in paperback. The fight for Allward is far from over. Queen Erida continues her march through Allward, crumbling castles and conquering kingdoms with an unstoppable army. To raise an army of their own, Corain and her companions face perilous lands, dangerous mercenaries, and seething monsters. But will they be strong enough to confront the latest evil that Queen Erida has unlocked? Author Victoria Aveyard.
Bladebreaker has all the twists and turns, magic and action that readers enjoyed from Realmbreaker. This time, the fate of the world is at stake, and Corain must defeat Queen Erida's wicked forces to become the hero she's destined to be.
Bladebreaker is now available in paperback, wherever books are sold.
Recent news reports are raising the alarm about illegal, disposable vapes in kid-enticing flavors that are pouring in from China. Here's Fentanyl Fathers co-founder Greg Swan.
I lost my firstborn son, Drew, to an overdose, a tragedy no parent should experience. The FDA has started taking action against illegal, disposable vapes that could contain deadly fentanyl. Now, they need to get every one of these out of our communities.
Sponsored by Fentanyl Fathers.
What is dadication?
I am the father of a 9-year-old little girl and a 6-year-old little boy. And I find fatherhood both relentlessly challenging and relentlessly rewarding. My daughter is biological and my son is adopted. I love them both so much. From the morning when you wake up to putting them to bed at night, and every moment in between, it really is so special, and boy, is it exhausting. One thing that I fear about being a parent is the future for my children. I think a parent's job is to protect our children, but also prepare them for the world so they become good, kind human beings. But I'm also hopeful that the future holds a more inclusive and compassionate world for them.
That's dadication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Heart valve disease is more common than you or your doctor may think, especially as you get older. It's serious but treatable with the proper diagnosis. If you or a loved one are experiencing shortness of breath, fatigue, chest tightness or pressure, dizziness or fainting, talk to your doctor and ask for an echocardiogram to get diagnosed early and enjoy your best quality of life. Learn more at askforecho.com. That's ask4echo.com.
Hi, it's Practical Polly's radio show. If you're just figuring out that healthier cooking oils are better than solid fats, you may be asking, now what am I going to do with all these tubs of lard? Ever had one of those moments when your favorite skinny jeans feel too tightly tailored? Generously apply lard to your hips and thighs, and those fancy pants will slide on like a dream. Or here's a family-friendly idea. How about making your yard into a lard fun park? Frost your driveway with a nice thick coating and give those kiddos a downhill thrill no matter what time of year. Having a bad hair day? Yep. A little lump of lard can tame your flyaways in a jiffy. So there's no need for that lard to go to waste or to your waste. But get your best heart-healthy trade-up with healthier oils like canola, olive, or other vegetable oils, which can actually lower your chances for heart disease. Now that's a tip worth keeping for life. Learn more at heart.org/facethefats. Canola Info is the national supporter of the American Heart Association's Face the Fats campaign.
All right, welcome back to the Silk or Joe Show. Thank you for sticking with us through this hour of the program. I say that, but we still have 8 or 9 minutes left, and joining us for those 8 or 9 minutes, we have Miko Derry. He is president and CEO at the Adams Project, and we appreciate him being on the program. He has an op-ed out over at Inside Sources titled "The Right Way for GOP Candidates to Address Crime," and the word "right" is in air quotes there, so I'm assuming it's because it's a pun. Miko Derry, appreciate you being on the show today. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. Thanks for having me on to bring the show home.
All right. Appreciate that. So what is the right way for the GOP candidates to address crime? Because we saw the previous the GOP debate, the Fox News host kind of tried to bring it up, at least in the vein of gun control and gun crimes, and even tried to blame a little bit of the rising crime rates on Mike Pence. None of them seem to have a very good answer to these questions, though.
You know, I have to say that I was in the room for the debate there in Milwaukee, and when the topic came up, I got a little bit excited. And the reason I was excited is because this is an issue and a topic that absolutely Republican candidates can win on. And interestingly enough, it's not through the same old worn-out messages that we've tried in the past using things like common sense or tough on crime. It's actually through a nuanced approach that still has a simple message. First and foremost is that candidates need to support our law enforcement, and over 87% of Republicans think that the whole defund the police movement was misguided and impractical. Second is to demand accountability. And we heard this from the candidates on the stage that night. They talked about how we have to hold prosecutors who do not do their jobs, we have to hold them accountable. Governor DeSantis has gone so far as to actually suspend some of those prosecutors in Florida. The third and critically important is that we have to focus on rehabilitation. 95% of the 2 million people who are behind bars today while we're talking, 95% of them will return home at some point. And if we do not invest in rehabilitation, we're just setting ourselves up for really an unsafe situation for our law enforcement when they have future encounters with those same people. I think that the candidates did a decent job of not going into some unhealthy territory. We're very disciplined in talking about violent crime and laying the blame on some of our elected officials who just frankly aren't doing their job.
And as far as prison reform goes, yeah, I'm going to agree that that's something that's desperately needed. Unfortunately, though, it's probably almost at the point where you need to gut some of the system. I've talked with people who have been in the prison system, and you know, it's kind of rehabilitation is not really encouraged. In fact, some of the, especially at the lower security areas, prisons, they sort of encourage severely negative behaviors, disobeying the rules, so long as the prison administration is the one telling you to do such things. You know, like lying about an inmate that the administration finds problematic, for example, and, you know, bullying different people and all that sort of thing. It's not gearing these people toward coming back into society.
You know, I think this is a chord that has been struck in certain circles, and I think we saw it happen on an unprecedented level with the passage of the First Step Act in Congress not so many years ago. And the reason it was so important was because it captured the realization of the general public that we have to incentivize rehabilitation. and we've heard this in our focus groups and through our polling much more recently, just even this year, that people understand that you have to balance punishment and rehabilitation, but you also have to incentivize that rehabilitation. And that's why the First Step Act polls at well over 80% favorability, because it incentivizes those in federal prison to participate in programming that's going to better equip them for jobs when they get out of prison. And that is the most important single key to making sure that they stay out of the system long term.
Right, because if you just lock them up for 5-10 years or whatever, especially with the way technology moves forward now, you know, they're not going to know how to do much of anything. And even McDonald's has changed a lot in the last 5 or 10 years from what it used to be. So, you know, people come out, they have, well, not only do they have a huge gap in their resume, they have that huge gap on their knowledge. And the only thing they really know at that point is how to survive in the prison system, and perhaps that committing crimes is the only way they can get by now that they can't even get a job.
That's absolutely right. And we can't forget the safety aspect of this. The safety aspect being that even when people feel safe in their suburban or rural homes, the majority of America continues to either shop or work in population centers. And if they don't feel safe going to work and to shopping, there's an economic impact there as well. One of the things that we know is that Republicans can absolutely win elections on the idea of being able to address prison populations, address the rehabilitation process. And the way to get there is through supporting our law enforcement and through making sure that we hold people accountable at an appropriate level for their actual crimes or for dereliction of duty. If they can do those three things, we found that voters respond overwhelmingly positive to a candidate that is going to do that.
Hmm. Now, is this an issue that, have you seen any of the presidential campaigns sort of make this a more notable issue, or has it always just been like, you know, if you go on their about page on their web, on the campaign website, it'll have a little blurb about the prison reform and maybe that's about it?
I think that there's several candidates who have a good story to tell. Whether we're talking about the former president, Donald Trump, who did pass the First Step Act, or if we're talking about Tim Scott, who as senator was a champion for getting the First Step Act through the legislature. And honestly, he's done a great job being a spokesman for the First Step Act when he has been asked about it in the media. Or if we're talking about Governor DeSantis, as he talks about his tenure as governor, and who also, despite his previous attacks on First Step Act, he did vote for it in Congress, and he signed a very similar piece of state legislation while he was governor in Florida. And even Nikki Haley, I think, has some very good instincts about prison systems that she's been on the record talking about. And I don't see any of the candidates as being particularly problematic. The question is, do they recognize the value that that record has when it comes to voters? And I'll tell you right now, as someone with a political consulting background myself, we tend to be a little bit of a lazy bunch. We want to go for the quick, hard, sharp jabs that are going to stick with people. And when we take that reach for the easy button, we tend to say things like, tough on crime, or that we just need to crack down. And it might get applause in the moment, but it doesn't actually win votes. And that's going to be the key. Will the candidates run on their own record?
Right. That's largely why this segment has been focusing mainly on reforms and the like after inmates have been incarcerated, because everyone's going to agree, yes, prosecutors should be doing their job. They shouldn't be letting criminals off. These Soros-funded prosecutors have got to go, and these political operatives need to be doing their jobs. But then, once everyone agrees on that, what comes next? And Adam Gwillett, appreciate you being, or sorry, Mika Derry, appreciate you being on the Silk or Joe show today. I was looking at the other guest that we had an article from. And your piece is over at Inside Op-Ed, and it is titled The Right Way for GOP Candidates to Address Crime, and our website, MainStreetRadioNetwork.com. Be seeing you.
The opinions you hear on the Main Street Radio Network are those of the host, callers, and guests, and not necessarily those of the station, Main Street Radio Network, its management, or advertisers. The information on the Main Street Radio Network does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. So please, consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions or comments about Main Street Radio Network, contact us at 703-719-0433 or at our website, MainStreetRadioNetwork.com.